So what brings you to Blaviken, Whitehair? You came for a monster?
I was traveling by the swamp.
Well, that would be your mistake, then. Why wouldn't you travel by main road?
It's hard to make a living on main roads.
And you desperately need money for new clothes. More and more, I find monsters wherever I go.
Welcome to Kinfolk Lore, a podcast where we explore fictional worlds that bring people together. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who love to talk about world building and sci-fi and fantasy. We hope that over time, through our shared love of our favorite stories, we all become family on this podcast journey.
For our second season, we will be discussing The Witcher, the epic fantasy show by Netflix. Today, we're going to talk about major plot points in episode one, titled The End's Beginning, and give you our reflections on the show and some takeaways that will help you navigate this world.
You know, Andrea, wizards are all the same. They talk nonsense while making wise and meaningful faces. But not us. We're going to talk normally about this podcast and let you know that it... We're going to try. And talk about adult content. This has adult content. And if you're opposed to the occasional joke about Riverside boning, this may not be the podcast for you. But otherwise, enjoy The Witcher.
So we should talk a little bit about why we chose The Witcher for our second season.
I'm into it.
It is a fascinating world where the magic is front and center. There's no shying away from the dragons, no pretending that, certain people don't have special powers. And the characters are interesting and complex, and they have changing motivations over the course of this season.
Yeah, it's really cool. I really like a lot about the way that they handled magic, which is one of our biggest criticisms about another show we love, Game of Thrones. And I also, one of the things is, in watching it, I really realized, like, there's a lot of people thinking, oh, this is going to be the next Thrones. And I just love how different these stories are. And I think, like, it's really cool for a beginner to get into this world, like, totally separate from wondering, oh, man, can I compare this to that show? So it was another reason, one of the motivations I had.
Yeah, the magic is the main point of the show. The plotting and conflict that are human conflicts are important to the plot, but they're not front and center. So that's much different from Game of Thrones. And also, there's just a lot more levity in the show. It doesn't take itself nearly as seriously.
It's like Xena Warrior Princess and Hercules had a love child named The Witcher. That's what I feel like. Anyway, going into our summary, let's talk about the episode. The Witcher, Geralt of Rivia, is fighting a monster known as a Kikamora. Roach is not about that life, so he is slowly backing away as The Witcher goes into battle. He wins this battle with the Kikamora by thrusting his sword into its head. The credits roll, displaying the solar eclipse. This symbolizes the black sun of Renfri that she was born under, which is a harbinger for what's to come. Geralt takes the monster's corpse into town, where he is planning on selling this corpse to the alderman. In the tavern, he receives a hostile welcome, to say the least, being greeted with things such as, you mutant son of a bitch, and a lot worse. So they're not feeling the homie, let's just say that.
Also, this tavern is full at breakfast time. What's going on?
Day drinking is all the craze in Blaviken. They are like all about it. They love it. They're all about throwing one back in the morning.
Do you guys have jobs? Like, what's going on? I don't understand. Yes.
Only the people in the tavern seem to work. That's it. They're the only ones. There for their enjoyment. So anyway, at that point, Renfri basically introduces herself by stopping them from attacking him. And says that she's going to buy him a beer, who the bartender begrudgingly gets them both a beer. The Witcher is pretty impressed with Renfri's drinking skills. She throws one back pretty quickly. And then they start to flirt, and she takes this opportunity to shade Geralt about his wardrobe. At that moment, a young woman asks how much he's selling the Kikamora for. They begin, and he, you know, begins to walk out to show her the Kikamora. She reveals herself as being the alderman's daughter and lets him know that the alderman wouldn't really be interested in the Kikamora, but that he should sell this beast to the wizard. who pays for little odds and ends to basically create his elixirs and potions. And he asks, how does she know this? So, of course, she says that she sold her dog once, who mysteriously, in air quotes, mysteriously died when she sold it for 15 crowns. So Geralt, at that point, says, okay, he's going to go ahead and, you know, follow her to the wizard. Really wild that he would follow this sociopathic child who just said that she killed a rat and a dog. But okay, yeah. He's the Witcher. So
she's totally crazy. She's definitely a sociopath. It's kind of scary.
Like, super scary. She's like, yeah, I killed a rat. Yeah, what kind of beast have you killed? She definitely is trying to impress the Witcher by killing rats and dogs. So Geralt says, you know, take me to him in a brooding voice that makes Jon Snow sound like a master orator. I mean, he's like, it's crazy. I was like, what is going on with this guy? He's like super broody. So by then, you know, she also shades this guy about his wardrobe.
Yeah, everybody's really down on him with his clothes. These people are so judgmental.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, what if he can't afford new clothes? What is wrong with them?
Like, right, he's crazy. Like out here actually trying to earn some coin, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. Working, and they're shading him about his clothing while drinking in the morning. It's not a good look on this town. I don't like it.
At all. I don't like it either. I don't like it either. The gray cloak and the Rhaegar Targaryen wig is not working for them. They don't love it. They're killing them. So anyway... I will say this at this point. Don't you feel like, I know this is like a little bit of a departure from the summary, but don't you feel like Henry Cavill and Geralt are like the Rhaegar Targaryen that we should have got in Thrones? Just quick segue.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I totally agree. Rhaegar was supposed to be this like great warrior, and the one that we got was like kind of like a itty-bitty version of his younger brother.
I mean, Robert Targaryen should have crushed that guy that they showed. Like, that was, like, crazy. Anyway, but let's... Robert Baratheon, sorry. He should have crushed that guy. Anyway, it's wild. So anyway, she takes Geralt back to this story, to the wizard. And this is, like, at this point, she reveals her name as being Marelka. And that, you know, basically explains to him, you know, what the people think about him, which I'm sure the Witcher has heard before, but it's good for us as an audience. She basically says that her mother thinks that he is a filthy degenerate that was born of hell through sorcery and as a diabolic creation.
Tell us what you really feel, little girl.
Yeah, right? Mom's not feeling the kid. She's not feeling him, you know? Good Lord. Anyway, they arrive at the wizard's dwelling at this point after she shared all that. And we get our first sign that this show is going to lean into the magic. And I really dig it. When Geralt walks through a closed door into an illusion of beautiful and naked women made by the wizard named Stregobor. Or Arion, if you're nasty, in case you were wondering. He goes by the name Arion. Stregobor tells the Witcher that he jacked the old wizard's house who lived here. And his name, also, by the way, and went into hiding. He says that he wants the Witcher to kill the worst kind of monster, the humankind. He would like for the Witcher to kill Renfri, the woman he just met in the bar. He explains that Renfri is a mutant and that she was born. She has been hunting him, trying to kill him, and offers Geralt a choice to choose the lesser of two evils by killing Renfri. And Geralt refuses.
Can I just say that I did not need all the naked women?
Yeah,
like I immediately was like, I don't like this guy. Like, what's the deal with all these naked ladies walking around? There's no reason for them to be naked. Like, they look cold. It's not a good look.
And he's looking. He's out here like, you know, Dan and Dave. He's, you know, sex position for no reason. That's what it is. He's like, you know, he's been creating illusions. It's crazy. Yeah, no, it was a little bit much, but it was also like, yeah, I really like that they introduced all these things about, you know, why the people feel the way they feel about the Witcher through, you know, the conversations that he had with Marelka, the conversation that he's having with, you know, Renfri, the conversation he's having with Stregobor. And it's like, he's instantly, you feel for him because you understand that he's a person who has to do a job to make his coin, but he's also pulled in many different directions by a lot of these people. And that's probably, it's like he knows that that's what's happening to him everywhere he goes. Everyone has an agenda.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they did a lot of work in these first couple of scenes, building the background for The Witcher and also letting us know that he's not seen as a hero. You know, people don't like him. They don't trust him, and mutants are not trusted in this world.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a definite interesting thing, interesting take the way they did that. And, you know, so some of those takeaways were good. I really, you know, I like that they start right in with right away we are establishing that he is a, you know, a slayer of monsters. Like, he comes in and he kills that Kikimora and he's looking to sell it. Like, his job is, like, killing monsters, selling them for a price to be able to live his life and go through the countryside. So I think, like, that's pretty interesting, too, the way they introduce, like, these things to us as an audience that isn't maybe familiar with it. If you didn't play the games, that set the tone for me and allowed me to be able to follow a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that when I heard that this show is about a monster killer, I wasn't quite sure. I thought he was going to be like a hero, right? He's not. Mm-hmm. This is his job. Like, he's killing mm-hmm. monsters to make money. And it's really interesting that in a world where you need to have, like, basically a monster exterminator. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting too.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to the kingdom of Syntra.
Syntra.
Syntra is a kingdom. We're not quite sure where it is in proximity to where The Witcher is right now. But we're introduced to the kingdom by seeing a group of teenagers and children play a little CeeLo. They're out here rolling the dice.
7-Eleven.
Gambling, yes. In the middle of the town square. Like, what's going on? Gambling.
Today again is a good day. Ice Cube style, you know? Just sitting there shaking up the dice. Watch them shake them. 7-Eleven. 7 even backdoor Little Joe. What's yeah, that's great.
What kind of world is this? Beer before breakfast, a little gambling in the courtyard. Like, I have questions. What's going on?
Oh my gosh. Gambling and debauchery everywhere you turn.
Everywhere you go. Great. So, the teenagers disband when a group of knights arrive, and they're basically there to grab one of the children, Princess Cirilla of Syntra, who has been summoned by her grandmother. Cirilla joins her grandmother, Queen Calenthe, and the king, Iced, who is her, her step-grandfather. They have a funny back and forth here. The queen is, like, doing her duty and, you know, telling people how wonderful they are for swearing their fealty to the kingdom. And her husband and granddaughter are basically talking smack behind her and making jokes. It's a little bit lighthearted and funny.
He's like asking her if she won the dice game. And then she's like, nah, I would have, but they ran up on me and made me leave. And he's all like, how can you win battles if you can't win at dice? I'm like, yo, dude, this is like, there's no correlation between having a mean dice game and being able to swing a sword. No correlation.
Right. Anyway. Also, like, who talks about, like, having relations with someone's grandmother in front of them?
Well, after my bedroom chamber duties, I was a little worn out. What is going on with this guy? He's definitely a bad influence on our girl Siri.
I mean, maybe she wouldn't be out there gambling if she had better role models. I don't know.
Are we as judgy as the people of Blaviken? Are we judging him like we're judging the wardrobe of Geralt of Rivia?
We're being a little judgy. It's true. So at the evening banquet, the queen kind of dismisses her husband's concerns about the southern kingdom of Nilfgaard. Nilfgaard is on the move. There's a lot of turmoil in the south. And the queen is very dismissive of it. She's kind of like, yeah, they always have problems. Cirilla inquires about the conflict, and the queen basically dismisses what she's, you know, she doesn't want her to worry about it. And Cirilla says to her, well, when you were my age, you won a great battle. So the folks from Nilfgaard do show up, because clearly the queen was being negligent. They basically show up, like, that night. And the entire palace is under siege. The kingdom's mage, whose name is, we learn later, his name is Mausak, puts a protective barrier around the castle after there's this big battle that ensues. And
how cool is that? It was so cool. My gosh.
Yeah. Sorry. I mean, between the battle was actually really cool because the queen is a badass, right? She's mm-hmm. like out here in armor fighting with her people. Yes, she was negligent because they tried to warn her that Nilfgaard was coming, but she rode out herself to meet them. King Eist is wounded and killed in the battle. The queen is completely devastated, but she gets back to the castle, and that's when Malsak puts up the protective barrier, which I thought was really cool visually. And also, once again, like, magic is front and center. Like, this they're going to fight with both swords and with arrows, but they're also going to fight with magic.
Yep. Yeah, that's what made it so cool. Just to see the effect when they run into, like, the barrier that he puts up and nobody can get through and they're just shooting and you know that there's nobody going to get through it. It's just amazing. It's visually stunning.
Yeah,
like, visually
stunning. It's very cool. So the barrier, he says that he can hold up the barrier as long as he holds up. But it eventually, just like the force of all of these people trying to get through it, it starts to corrode, and eventually he can't hold it anymore. The queen orders Malsak to save the princess and tells her other guards basically that they need to distribute poison to all of the guests in the castle. And the guests are basically the people who were at the dinner. Like, all of this is occurring in the last 24 hours or so. She tells her granddaughter to find Geralt of Rivia, and Ciri doesn't know who that is. She's a little bit confused. They have this really horrible scene where she's pulled away from her grandmother as she's wounded. And I was like, this is awful. And Ciri screams out, and the entire room shakes. And I don't mean like shakes because she has like Mariah Carey screeching skills. It shakes because the like raw emotion of this moment is affecting the very structure of the world. Like, everything is shaking. And it's clear that this is not the first time it's happened, because the queen doesn't really react that much to it. She seems to know that her granddaughter is has some kind of power and is special in some way.
Ariana Grande pipes.
Okay, please don't get the Mariah stans and the Ariana Grande stans in the Twitter feed. I don't need to see it. Don't add us. Okay.
Oh, man. Who's saying it better?
Don't, Ciri, don't
Ariana,
at me.
Or Mariah?
This is at Paul. This is Paul's take.
Oh, man.
So, Ciri escapes for the moment. She's taken away, and when she's taken away, her grandmother pulls a Tommen from Game of Thrones and just leaps to her death out the window, which I was like, not prepared. I was like, why is she going to the window? She's looking out. Oh, okay. Oh, no, she's going out the window.
Oh, man. She was like, straight Tommen. She didn't even care. She's like, that's it. I can't take it anymore. I'm done.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes to show how she had mentioned to her granddaughter when they were talking that the Nilfgaardians are basically going to slaughter and torture everyone. And so that's why they were distributing poison to all the guests. Which I also have another theory about why they did that, but no one is going to be left in this castle to live and to be tortured by the Nilfgaardians. So we go back to Geralt of Rivia, who's hanging out with Roach. Roach seems a lot calmer.
He's a lot calmer. He's there's no Kikimora, you know, it's a nice little fire going. It's like real vibes. Vibes are happening, so he's chill.
I don't like that the horse's name is Roach, but, you know, I'm disgusted by the fact that the horse's name is Roach. But anyway, Renfri shows up and she knows that he has been asked to kill her. And she tries to persuade him not to, and to, you know, kill Stregobor instead. But they decide that they're, you know, going to have sex. I mean, it was like a really weird
I've got one thing that'll convince you not to kill me and kill Stregobor. Sex.
Yeah.
That'll be it. That's it. Let's do it.
They get down to business really quick. It went really from quick. Being, they had like this conversation where he's like, no, I don't want to choose. And yeah. I've heard this all before. And then yeah. she's just like, oh, okay, like, let me get a little closer. I'm going to seduce him and we're going to have sex.
I mean, yeah. Was her plan to, like, kill him, like, well, afterwards? Or what? I don't know what her plan was.
Yeah,
I don't know
where she was going with this. I'm still a little confused about where she was going, too. But, yeah. you know what? Sex is cool. They had sex.
Maybe she just wanted some. Maybe she's like, ooh, look at Henry Cavill looking all swole. Come on. You know what? He's a good-looking man.
I mean,
no question about
they're
it.
Both very attractive people. So I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. It's a little off-topic for them, but I get it.
Yeah.
So after their, you know, little tussle in the woods, Geralt wakes up and he goes back to the town square where he and Renfrey face off. He does not want to do this. He's very much like, I really don't want you to do this. You should just leave. Like, we can't, I don't want to fight you. But they do fight. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool fight.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So cool. Like, the action in this first episode is crazy. It lets you know just, hey, we're in for like some really cool fight sequences and just, I mean, everything down to the way he finishes the fight is, it reminds you of like video game action. Like you can tell that they took this story from a video game. You
know yeah, what I mean? Yeah. Cool. No, the fight was pretty cool. I also loved how she fought. Like she, mm-hmm. we haven't really seen much evidence of her being a mutant, but she's clearly a good fighter. And she, this fight that they have is really good. I knew that he was going to win the fight. You know, obviously yeah. this show is called The Witcher. It's about him, but mm-hmm. she was quite his match. Like he mm-hmm. struggled. So Geralt does win the fight and he kills her. Mm-hmm.
Begrudgingly kills her.
Yeah, he did not want to. He really didn't want to, but he does. And then all the townsfolk show up, along with Stregobor, who is just the world.
Shady.
I just don't like him. He may be
shady. He's shady as fuck.
I think
he's super shady.
He's my Azrael. Like, I'm just out on this guy. I don't want him. He's not cool. I'm not a fan. So the townspeople basically turn on the Witcher yeah. and start stoning him, and it's, you know, he's hurt, which I thought was interesting, because you can tell that he knows from the beginning of the episode that he's not loved. Yeah. But when that first stone strikes him, he's genuinely hurt by it. Like, mm-hmm. his feelings are hurt. It bothers him that the people don't trust him and dislike him.
And it also, I think, hurts him that Marelka, who basically said, oh, my mother thinks these things about you, but I think you're a hero killing these monsters. She comes up right when all this is happening and she's all like, you know, leave, like you need to go. And I think that turn from a person who kind of like admired him, was even trying to impress him with her own, you know, killings and things she's done. Is a lot. He's like, man, the one person who kind of was cool, the two people who actually were like there for, like, I killed Renfrey. Now this girl's like, get out of here. And I never liked Stregobor. You could tell he didn't trust Stregobor. He wasn't going to kill Renfrey for Stregobor. So it's why I think you get to really see the loneliness of who he is as a character and as a person in this world. When you see this ending part of the episode,
he should have known that that little girl couldn't be trusted when she said she killed her dog. I'm just putting it out there.
Who does that? Yeah, who does that?
I get it.
Oh my
so
gosh.
Back to Cirilla. She is attempting to escape from the castle. She is captured by one of the Nilfgaard knights. And as he's getting her away from the castle, we're not quite sure where he's taking her. Her power manifests again when she screams. And this time it's really, like, really powerful. She mm-hmm. basically shatters the earth between them. That was also very cool to see. And in that moment, she's able to get away from him because he can't. There's like a huge, like, she creates a crater in between them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's able to run away and get out of there. And so for now, Cirilla is on her own running through the forest looking for Geralt, even though she doesn't know quite why. And that's basically how the episode ends.
Yeah, no, it's really, really strong. I dug it. I dug the episode. And so one of the things that we did this for is because a lot of our friends and people who are listeners of the show and people who we spoke to, some are fans and know this lore very well, and some are like us. They're new to it, and they just don't know, like, a lot about the world. So we got a segment that we're going to do here called Things You Need to Know. And I'll let Andrea start it off with the first thing that people need to know when watching the show.
Right. So a big takeaway from this show, from this first episode, was they really let us know that mutants are, one, something that they're humans with some kind of a, like, different attribute, but they're disliked and distrusted. So Renfri's a mutant. The Witcher is a mutant. We will meet other mutants throughout the course of the story, but the main thing to know about them is that they have some kind of magical ability, and there's different ways that they can get it, but they are very heavily distrusted by the people who live in this on this continent.
Yeah, I mean, super duper clear when you know Marelka is explaining, like, what people say, and when he walks into the bar, and then it seems like there's different, you know, allegiance and different, you know, kind of lines drawn against, like, humans and mutants too, right? Because Stregobor is like a wizard, but he's like all about getting rid of these mutant girls who he says were born underneath the eclipse. And so that's something I guess we can talk about a little bit is inside of the opening of the episode, we see the eclipse, which is basically what is come to be known, which is referenced in the episode as the curse of the black sun, or the mania of Mad Elibald. And it was a prophecy that I looked up to kind of get more familiar with what was happening here, that basically was made by a mage called Eltibald. And it foretold the end of the human civilization at the hands of six girls born during or after a certain eclipse. And Renfri happens to be one of these six girls who were born during that time. In a passage from The Last Wish, on page 83, it speaks about the black sun and how it was basically to announce the imminent return of Lilith. Lilith's path was to be prepared by 60 women wearing gold crowns who would fill the river valleys with blood. So one of the reactions to this was Stregobor wanting to kill the girls who were born underneath this eclipse to be able to make sure that the human race did not become extinct.
Interesting. I'm going to reserve my commentary about Stregobor because I just don't like him. So
well, I'm just saying, like, that's not a good thing. He's like, yeah, I'm going to kill these 60 or six, or I'm going to kill these girls just because they were born at a certain time, just in case they happen to be the one. Yeah, Stregobor's not a good dude. I'm with you. I'm down.
And in addition to that, he not only did he seek to have all of them killed, he also, you know, he performed autopsies on them, which was a contention that he and the Witcher had after Renfri was dead, was basically the Witcher was like, you are not going to touch her. You're not going to mutilate her like these other girls. Renfri had also mentioned that she had, that Stregobor's, the guy that he sent after her, had assaulted her and had tried to kill her, and which is why she killed him and was able to get away, because she just, this guy, he's not a good guy, and he seems to me like the type of person who is very much about the ends. He doesn't care how he gets there. He just does, he wants to stop this prophecy from happening. So if it means exterminating the women who were born under this black sun, then that's what he's gonna do.
Yep. It's reminds me of another guy that we're out on in another story, maybe Lord Asriel.
Yeah, as I said, in his Dark Materials, our first season, for those of you who are joining us just for The Witcher, Paul was out on Asriel from the beginning, and
done
just very consistently did not care for him, and was proven right. I mean, let's give you your due.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate that. I'm taking a bow on the other side of the mic. Okay.
No, so I'm hoping that I'm right about Strugglebore, that he's trash. So
I think you will be.
So another takeaway that we should have is just Cirilla. So we don't know why Cirilla has magical powers. It doesn't appear that her grandmother does. And it doesn't appear that other people, aside from the mage, which is a sorcerer or a wizard, Malsak have. But she is a magical young woman. She has a tremendous power that seems to be channeled through her emotions. So we don't know what the source is or how she's different. Maybe she's a mutant too. But we do know that she has these powers and that they can be devastating.
Yeah. No, it's really, really a great takeaway to like see like that she is magical early in the first episode. We know something's going on with her. And there's also that there's a conflict. Another thing that you should know is there's a conflict in the south in this episode. Nilfgaard and Syntra battle, and the casualties are very high. Nilfgaard apparently is looking for Ciri. Ciri with a C, not an S. But we don't know why they're looking for her. And Queen Calantha lets us know that the South is in a turbulent state. So the South is in turbulence. This battle is happening. And the Nilfgaard is looking for Ciri. That this is the main purpose for the battle.
Yes. Another thing that we want to talk about is the fact that in addition to the human conflicts, there are obviously monsters in this world. That's what the Witcher's whole purpose is, to hunt monsters for, you know, he is his job. He's basically like an exterminator for monsters. And then sell them for coin. I think that that's another level of conflict, right? I always find it interesting where there's a human conflict, which is obviously this issue with the South and Nilfgaard. But then also you throw into the mix that there's these monsters who, you know, some of them probably have motivations that are nefarious. A lot of them are probably just living their life. And part of living their life may be eating people or killing people, but whatever. So I think that's always an interesting addition. But they seem to be, at least in this episode, almost like side quest to, you know, like the monsters are part of the Witcher's story, but I don't see yet, not at least in this episode, no monster was the center of the story, which I think might surprise some people who don't know much about the source material, the game, and the books, because I think a lot of people heard that the Witcher was a monster killer and just assumed that this would kind of be like Supernatural, where there's like some kind of supernatural entity that they're chasing down, and then, you know, other things come out during the course of that. But it's basically a tool for him to have something to do each episode to move him through the story, but they're not always a central conflict.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I've heard, like, you know, obviously I've read up about, you know, people's impressions of the show, and we've had conversations, and I found that one of the things that what some people loved and some people didn't love was that there was a kind of like a monster of the week kind of like thing to it, right? Like every episode we were going to get a monster, even if it wasn't, you know, one that was central to the plot. It was like he was going to be involved in some kind of thing with a monster, which I thought was which was cool, and I thought that I personally enjoyed that. And I also think that the, you know, when he's in that conversation, where he's like talking about, like, you know, taking the Kikimora, and, you know, the girl that's talking to him about the different kinds of monsters that there are in the world is pretty interesting as well. So yeah. Like, so you get a preview of that.
Yeah, I kind of like the monsters is like a, it's almost like a, the way that in a procedural law show, you have a different case every episode, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the show is just about that case. The characters also develop and they have their own journey. And I kind of liked that too here, that the monster is in the gate, out the gate is the first thing we see in the story is a monster. But there's also a level to that. Is Renfri also considered a monster, or is Renfri more like our main character, who is a mutant. And so I think there's some comparison to, like, what are monsters and what aren't. And can, you know, Stregobor kind of made this comparison, like, there are, humans can be monsters too. So monsters are very central to the plot in a way that they help the Witcher move through it. But I think the main story here is about the human. Well, the human, I don't know, I don't want to say humans because, you know, some of the main characters are mutants, but it's about their humanity.
Unless you're Morelka, which you are a monster.
Well, yes, part of her humanity is that she's clearly a monster. Like, she's a sociopath.
Kill the dog. You kill the dog for 15 crowns. You're the worst. Anyway, you killed a little cute doggy. Anyway, moving on to the other thing, and maybe the last thing we want to talk about things that maybe you want to jump out here and know, is there's hints of a different timeline, right? Renfri mentions that the Queen, Cilanthra, just won a major battle, and that battle is mentioned earlier by Ciri, who says it happened when the Queen was her age. So we're seeing already an introduction that the storylines that we're seeing are happening at different time periods. And that is a little bit of a hint to think of things to come. Those of you who have binged it won't be a big surprise. Those of you who are maybe not totally in, you have some information coming. But it is a little bit of a hint about how they're telling this story with the timeline.
I didn't catch that on the first on the first watch. I was like, oh, okay. Okay, so I loved that they just, I think I said this earlier, but the way they just dive into the magic, like the fact that a monster was in the very first scene, the fact that there's wizards and mutants, and it's used as a tool to tell the story, but they never shy away from it. It's very much central to who the Witcher is as a character and who our other main characters, The Witcher and Cirilla are the main characters of the story in a way, but there's also another character who's introduced in episode two, and she is also, magic is like her main story. So it's, I love that. Like, the idea that this is a fantasy that is very much rooted in magic was my favorite thing that they just like, they went in. They said, okay, This is a story about magic. We're not going to shy away from that.
Yeah, I think that's, we share that. Like, one of the major things, you know, that I took away from, walked away from Thrones feeling at the end of their run was how much the political intrigue was great. There was a lot of times where special effects were awesome. Kent and, you know, all of the props. But there was just something, it's a very magical story. And even, like, you know, the fact that we end up with Bran as king, and he's like, you know, one of the most magical people in the books, but they didn't lean into the magic during the telling of the story in the show. And right out the gate in the beginning, this show had said, yeah, this is about magic. This whole story is about magic, and the magic is what made The Witcher in the first place. And magic is a central theme in many of the main characters' stories. I just love that, and I love that the showrunners and the creators are not afraid to lean into it. So that's a big love for me. What did you want to see more of?
The explanation was really great in this episode. They introduced us to a little bit of The Witcher, like how he moves through the world, that he's a mutant, that people don't care for him. The conversation he had with the little sociopath was super illuminating.
Is that her rap name, Lil Sociopath?
Yeah. I'm never gonna learn this girl's name. I hope to never see her again. But but that conversation was full of information, as were a lot of the conversations in Cintra. The whole thing that you just talked about, with the mention of the battle from Cirilla, and then later it was mentioned again by Renfri, also kind of in passing, like neither of those mentions was the main point of the conversation. That kind of explanation in dialogue I really, really like. And so I thought it was well done. And I also liked how they introduced that there was this conflict happening with Nilfgaard. But it wasn't at first, like, something that felt urgent, and then it suddenly became urgent. And there will be a lot more about Nilfgaard as we move through the season, but I like that it was introduced early in this episode.
Yeah. You know, what I want to see more of is still kind of, you know, I've watched, obviously, every episode, and we're only talking about episode one, but what I really want to see more of is just what made The Witcher. Like, what is this all about? Like, what is the storyline behind Witchers in general? And there's a line in there where he talks about, he's talking to Stragobor, and Stragobor says, you know, he's talking to him about the monsters and everything, and he says, there's not much, it's weird to see your kind here, and he said, there's not much of my kind left. So what's the story behind why there aren't many Witchers left? Where did Witchers come from? This is something I'm really, like, interested in as a person who's new coming to this world, to understand more about the backstory around what that is.
Yeah, totally. I would love more. I'm always down for more backstory about the main characters. I think that's what really builds up a good story, is just knowing how they came to be, and how I would love to see the Witcher's origin story. And maybe we will get that.
Yeah, we might.
So, what did you question?
So, I guess, in the beginning when I first watched it, obviously I've watched it a few times now, I guess my major question was about why Nilfgaard was coming after Ciri. I didn't understand. I didn't understand why she was so central. And even, I knew that, you know, her screaming and then shattering the earth means she's a very magical person, and that she has some value to the world in general, but what is her importance? What is it that makes it where that someone would, you know, create a whole war, conquer kingdoms, and go after this child? And it's somewhat explained as we go on, I think, but that's a major question for me about it. And I questioned Geralt of Rivia's choices in life. Like, I don't understand why you follow little sociopath to a wizard's world. I don't understand why you don't realize that Renfri's also manipulating you, just like Stregobor. And I kind of wonder, you know, that he kind of fell for Marelka being, like, kind of, like, building him up, and just, like, kind of got manipulated into this tug of war between, like, warring factions in a town that he just showed up in. I kind of just feel like he's been baited a little bit, so I kind of questioned, like, his ability to be able to utilize his discernment about, like, what is going on in the world, you know? So, anyway, that was my
thought. I totally agree. I think I need to see more from him, for sure, and understand his motivations, because he seems really fearless in this, but then I'm not quite sure that he is. It's questionable whether, you know, I think it was this episode where it comes up, like, do Witchers feel? And I had that question too, because he seems really emotionless in the beginning, but it's clear that he does have feelings. So it'd be nice to know, you know, why I felt like he was very easily manipulated here, but he doesn't seem like the type of person who would be.
Yeah.
My question is really about a meta thing, which is just the way that this story is set up with the multiple timelines. People are really confused, and I think that's part of the reason. The story is not linear, and I'm not quite sure why. I think that the first episode, it does great work in terms of, like, establishing some of the rules of the magic. Maybe that's going too far, because I still don't quite understand what the Witcher's powers are. Neither do I understand what Renfri's powers are. But they do a good job in setting up the fact that this is a world where, like, magic exists. It is everywhere. It is also a dangerous world. But then I kind of was frustrated by the way we don't know where anything is in proximity to each other. So you feel kind of just off kilter, because you don't know, where is Sintra compared to Nilfgaard? Is this really far away? Is it close? You don't know where the Witcher is in comparison to Cirilla. So you don't really get a sense of, like, what does it mean for them to journey together? Like, what does it mean for them, not journey together, but journey towards each other? What does it mean for him to set off looking for her, or for her to set off looking for him? It's not clear, like, how far are they? Is this one town over, or are we talking that she's going to be going through the whole continent looking for him? And some of these things I think were intentional so that there would be aha moments throughout the season. And then some of them I think are just like, I don't think that I don't think that they considered that people can be quite easily distracted if they're confused. You know, I think a lot of people watched the first episode and weren't willing to keep going because they were so confused. Being confused by new, like almost a new language, because a lot of the names of places are not familiar to people who speak English, right? Even though this is an English speaking show. I think that once you have like all these names, all these characters, all these different places, you're playing a little bit with time. People can feel really overwhelmed and may not want to continue. So that was my big question, is just why this story was told narratively this way. We will never get an answer to that, right? Like, the showrunners are trying to honor the video game. They're trying to honor the audience that they thought would be most drawn to this, which are people who are familiar with the Witcher stories and also with the game. And so I don't expect to ever really understand this creative choice, but that was my main question. I liked this episode, but I definitely was confused. Like, we watched this first episode together, and you had seen it already, but I had not. And I was like, I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea. Yeah.
And that's how, and what was wild is like watching it the second time. The first time I watched it, I felt like that too. And then watching it with you, I was like, oh, I get it now. Like, there were things that popped out. And, you know, subsequently I've watched it, you know, two more times. So I'm seeing, like, you know, different things, seeing things differently, especially after seeing the whole show. And I mean, I have some thoughts about what you're saying, because I think that what came out to me about about this way they're telling the story and the confusion around it is it brought up something for me that I'm going to have full disclosure moment. When I first watched Game of Thrones, I had not read the books, and I went and I turned on the show multiple times to watch the first show. And I watched the first episode maybe, I don't know, four or five times. And every time I was like, I don't know if I'm going on with the show. And I remember having a conversation with you and also one of my best friends. And both of you said the same thing to me. Commit to the first season. And if you can get through the first season and you don't love it, then great. And once I hit episode 9, I mean, before then I was loving it. But episode 9 happened and I was like, oh, crap. Like, this is like the kind of show I love. And then I read the books, and then I got into the world, and I read all the numerous anthologies that freaking George has put out instead of putting out, you know, the Winds of Winter.
Can we get Winds of Winter, George? If you're listening, we want Winds of Winter.
Winds of Winter, please. And so I think that that's what I would say to people watching this show, is if you haven't gotten through the full season, if you started and stopped, if you're listening to the pod and you just, you know, you're fans of maybe what we did with His Dark Materials, and you just, hey, I'm going to listen to the pod, which we're very appreciative of. Give this a shot to get through the first season of just watching straight through without any expectation of understanding every little detail, because I think it will become clear by the end of the show whether you love it or you don't. You know, you'll say, I don't love this, or, wow, I'm really surprised that I gave it a chance as long as I did, and it actually worked out. That would be my first point. And I guess the last point about it is I think it has this structure because it's based a lot on, from conversations I've had with people who are very deeply in this lore, it's based on one of the main quests in the video game, and it's also based on the fact that the first book is not a linear book. It's a series of short stories about the journeys of the Witcher, battling these different monsters and encountering these different things. So I think they made some choices based on the video game quest and the short story to mash them up. And I think that's kind of where they're going with this, from what I've understood after researching a little bit.
Yeah, I get that. I think that it's a creative choice. I think it works somewhat, but not in every instinct. Anyway, I like the show, and I would go a little bit further and say people probably will, if this is a story that you will enjoy overall, I think it starts to come together more around episode 4. I don't even think, like, to me, I was totally in by episode 4, but I was super confused with, I would say episode 1 and 2 were a bit confusing to me. And then the story starts to become more clear around the third and fourth episode. So I definitely think that if you can stick around for those, that you'll get a lot of enjoyment around about the show. Like, you'll just start to love the show more if you can stick with it through at least the fourth episode.
I agree. I can see that for sure. So we're here. We're coming to the close of this episode, first episode of our second season. I want to tell you guys, it's great to be able to like do this with you, Andrea, and also with you guys listening. So please, if you are we want to make a space here for all people who just enjoy sci-fi and fantasy. So if you are an expert in the world of The Witcher, we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions after listening to the episode, we'd love to hear from you. If there's things that you want to inject like into the conversation, we'd love to be able to take some of your comments. Hit us up on Twitter, KinFolklorePod on Twitter. You can message any of us on Facebook or Instagram. You can message us on our Facebook page, the KinFolklore Podcast Facebook page. Or email us at kinfolklore@gmail.com. And leave comments. Leave comments down on Apple Podcasts or whatever, wherever you listen to your podcast. And we would love to hear from you there as well.
Yes, we would. And we definitely will take feedback and any insights, because a lot of the folks that we know who are going to be listening to the podcast have told us they already are excited about the fact that we're podcasting this, know a lot more about the story than we do. So we're more than open to hearing from you guys, because this is new for us. Like, we chose this in part because it's a story that we liked, but we didn't know a lot about it. And it's an interesting world to explore together. So thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.
All right, bye.